name is Daniel Graydon, and he's with Renew Massachusetts. And their organization work with Massachusetts Family Institute to do a lot of petitioning work and basically political activism. And so we are actually a part of this effort, and one of our members has been leading this. So I'd like to ask her to share a little bit about our experience working with MFI, and then after that, I'll hand it over to Daniel.
Brothers and sisters, it was a very good experience for me to work with Massachusetts Family Institute. I have learned a lot from them about the logistics and the political and how we can work with them to really, for our Lord, to really holding the conservative Christian value for the society, for our state, for the people and our children. So we were able to collect more than, I think, 40,000 signatures. A lot of help from our brother and sister in our church. We had more than 2,000 of people holding the signs and holding the signature board at the shopping mall, market basket for weeks and weeks. So we were able to do it. We were very happy, and we're thankful for your guidance and help and all the professional advice. So I just give the time to you, and we want to learn more from you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that introduction and for your hospitality so far tonight. I'm glad everyone was able to make it out in the snow. And from what I hear, it's going to be 50 tomorrow, and then we're going to get a foot of snow on Thursday. So I guess we can't complain too much because it's just going to get worse. So I really appreciate you all being here tonight. My name is Daniel Graydon. I work for the Renew Massachusetts Coalition as their Director of Operations and their Northeast Regional Field Director. I live in Methuen, Mass., right down the highway a little bit, and so I'm in charge of Essex and Middlesex counties. Pretty much here down to Marlborough and then north of the Pike all the way almost into Boston. So I'm going to be giving, there's three kind of different groups I'm going to be talking about tonight. This is intended just to be kind of a introduction to what we are, MFI, the Keep MA Safe Ballot Question Committee, and the Keep MA Safe, which is where I work. We're a sister organization of the Mass Family Institute. And we're doing about 15, 16 of these pre-lobby day trainings across the state in February with the hopes of giving pro-family and Christian conservatives an opportunity and avenues to get more involved in their state to affect change for the better. And I know this church and many, many others are very involved in the signature drive. And I thank you for that. And we're going to talk about that just a little later. Andrew wanted to be here tonight, the president of MFI, but he had a previous commitment. So I'm going to go through their slides as well. Normally it will be he giving it. And then when we get to the end, it shouldn't take too long. We'll just open it up for questions. We can talk more about what the different organizations do, how you guys can get more involved. Before I go any farther, there's a kind of a just kind of an activist packet up here in the front. It looks like this. There's a couple different handouts that we're going to be talking about. You can refer to just as we go through. There's plenty of them, so if you need one, and what mic am I on, by the way? If I move around, am I going to be okay? I don't know if I'm on this one or if I'm on the one here. I can talk loud enough. I think everyone can hear me. If you can't hear me, just put your hand up, and I'll talk a little louder. So the Massachusetts Family Institute. Let's see if this is working. Uh-oh, my clicker's out. Here we go. Okay. Now I'm back. Mass Family Institute is a partner organization focused on the family, the Family Policy Alliance. These are the states highlighted in dark that have organizations similar to the Mass Family Institute. It's kind of the state arm of the national organization. And the family, they also work with the Family Research Council when we'll get to that when we talk about the bathroom bill, I guess, Family Relations Council. Sanctity of Life, Natural marriage and religious liberty are really the three pillars of focus for Mass Family Institute. They're really involved with lobbying and voter education in Massachusetts in regards to these issues. Another one that really more recently came into light was recreational marijuana. Massachusetts voters approved the use, the legalization and use of recreational marijuana this past November at the ballot box. These were the results just in Boston. To give you an idea, you know, a lot of the suburbs up here and stuff, it necessarily wasn't as popular, but with big cities like Boston, tend to favor those things. The law allows local control over marijuana in three general ways, to impose a sales tax of up to 2%, to prohibit the sale of marijuana for consumption, prohibit the sale of marijuana for consumption where sold. And the law also allows local control over marijuana in three general ways. Impose ordinances and bylaws regulating and even prohibiting cultivation, processing, distribution, sale of marijuana for recreational use. So it creates a state agency that is responsible for collecting that tax and then imposing ordinances and local, every town can also decide whether or not they want to allow marijuana cultivation and sale in their towns. There is a process for that, which MFI is working with other partners across the state who opposes ballot question to give people in towns that it didn't pass or who don't want it coming into their town an avenue to fight it in their own municipality. And that's still kind of in the works because it's a long, if you were looked through it when you got the informational panel for the ballot questions, it was like maybe 20 pages long, and you know, a lot of people are still trying to figure out exactly what it means for marijuana use in Massachusetts. Something else is the sex ed mandate. This has been something that's been ongoing on Beacon Hill. They've been trying to pass for some years now. So far, we've been successful in keeping it, in fighting it, and keeping it from becoming law. It deals with, you know, what they're teaching our children. And Planned Parenthood is one of the sponsors of this curriculum, which is being used and pushed by Beacon Hill to have in all schools in Massachusetts. Just a little bit of what it does is an act relative to healthy youth is what they call it. They always try and put positive names on bad pieces of legislation. It requires all Mass public schools to teach sexual health education that is age appropriate and medically accurate. And those are kind of vague terms. And of course they're that way for a reason. They require all students to be taught an affirmative representation of lesbian, gay, and bisexual and transgender individuals, relationships, and families. It requires schools to teach about abortion as one of the options for pregnancy. Students will be taught how to obtain contraception or an abortion without parental consent or knowledge. This is part of the health curriculum. And this is part of the old version, and this is part of the new version that was just introduced last week. Pardon? The last one, what? Federal, you're saying? That's a question for Andrew. He's a lawyer at MFI. I believe you're right, but this would. Okay. Well, correct. Yeah, correct. And it would be part of the curriculum is teaching them how to obtain it. And it wouldn't just be legal, but they would be almost encouraged, you know, by the teachers. The State Department of Elementary and Secondary Education is given authority to implement, administer, and ensure compliance with the sex ed mandate, which means no more local control. So no more families going, you know, you wouldn't be able to show up as a parent to your local school committee and to advocate for this not being a part of your school's curriculum because it wouldn't be up to the local municipalities anymore. It would be mandated by the state and enforced by the state. This is, I believe, a video about the Engage curriculum that MFI has put together. I don't know if we have audio or not. Let's see if I can get it working.
So I think for most of us, we believe that sex is binary, male and female. And again, looking at Scripture, we see that repeatedly, both in the Old Testament and the New, that God made us male and female in His image. So that's theologically significant. But what people are being taught nowadays, and what I encountered for the first time in law school, is this idea that human sexuality exists on a spectrum. And that spectrum includes not just sexual orientation, who you're sexually attracted to, but also your sexual identity and also your sexual presentation of self. And we see created all these sort of bizarre new terms. For example, as a man, I would be defined as a heterosexual cisgender male who identifies as male. Theoretically, you could have another man who identifies as female, but is of the orientation of a lesbian and presents as male, who would functionally be the equivalent of a heterosexual male, but yet be in a different place on this spectrum. Very bizarre stuff. And when we talk about LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer, it's that sort of transgender and queer, the TQ end of that acronym, where we really kind of go off into no man's land, and there are no rules or categories. It's very much on this spectrum, which allows for almost anything. And tragically, this spectrum is being promoted even again to young children in the form of the gender-bred person. This is something to promote this idea that you can kind of go on a choose-your-own-adventure of sexual orientation, who you're attracted to, gender identity. Do you feel yourself to be male or female or something in between? And then how do you present that? Do you present as a male or as a female? And so it really is a very confusing spectrum or matrix for children to be confronted with at a very young and impressionable age, and really stems from, at least in the case of transgenderism, this idea that you can be something that you are factually, scientifically, biologically not. So it is, at its core, a denial of truth.
Okay, so the Engage curriculum was written by Andrew Beckwith and the folks at MFI. I'm not sure if Michael King has been here to give an overview or not. It's meant to be used as a Sunday school curriculum. The book talks about a wide variety of issues that are being discussed on Beacon Hill and in Massachusetts. It's paired with DVDs with videos like that of Andrew and a couple other leaders at MFI. And so if you're interested in something like that, and Kathy might be in there too, if you are interested in using that at your church, just let me know after. There's actually a sign-in sheet I'm going to pass around a little bit if you want to just make a note, interested in getting engaged. That's Andrew or Michael's happy to talk to you about that curriculum. It covers a lot. It covers actually all the issues that we're talking about tonight and quite a few others to give really a pretty in-depth look, as you can see from some of the charts and the graphs that were in that video, kind of more than we can in a brief time tonight. I did fail to mention one of the things in the packet is a community action brief for the marijuana law. It gives a little bit more information. This is something that MFI and the Renew Mass Coalition produce as part of our voter education, voter awareness campaigns. We'll hand out one sheet like this. Down at the bottom is also the link to the MFI Facebook page. There's more information on the marijuana law and all the other ones there. So this deals with the Engage. Like I said, if you want to know more about that, just let me know after this. All right, Keep MA Safe is not an organization, but a ballot question committee, which some of you may be familiar with. It's created to repeal the bathroom and locker room law, which was passed in July. This is a brief timeline of kind of how we got to where we are today. July 8th, Governor Baker signed the bathroom bill into law. This is what's called a direct repeal. We had a 90-day window from when the governor signed the bill to collect 33,000 signatures of registered voters to put a repeal on the next election ballot, which would be 2018. So the fall of 2016, because the window was too short for 2016. It was difficult, as those of you who helped know, when it came down to it, you know, that 90 days, the Attorney General's office and the Secretary of State's office, that includes the time that they can take really as much as they want, up to 2 or 3 weeks to approve everything. So when all was said and done, we had about six weeks to get 33,000 signatures. We ended up needing about 55,000 because, you know, as those of you who collected know, some will get thrown out if they can't understand the signature, if the paper has even a little bit of a coffee stain on it, they'll get tossed and they won't count. So we have to make sure that we have more than the 33,000. We ended up with about 35,000, maybe a little over 35,000. So it was close, but in the time frame that we had, it really was amazing that we were able to do it with about, I'd say, between 500 and 600 active volunteers across the state out collecting signatures every weekend. And when we got the last couple weeks, it was every day there were people outside, you know, at supermarkets, post offices, and, you know, outside of churches collecting as well. So thank you to everyone who helped. Just a quick overview of what the law is. It bans discrimination against gender identity in public places of accommodation. That's language from the bill or the law. Restrooms, locker rooms, gyms, changing areas, the TJ Maxx or Macy's or Target, stores like that. Gender identity is poorly defined. It's defined as a sincerely held belief on that given day, regardless of appearance or anatomy, and it's fluid and change on a whim. So it's how you feel at that exact moment. That can change at any time. That can be, you know, a man deciding he feels as he's walking into a woman's room at Target or a TJ Maxx, we'll see in a minute, that he's a woman, to be able to go in there and to videotape, to film, to take pictures, whatever he wants to do, and then become a man again when he leaves. That's how poorly defined gender identity is. It's something that's difficult to define as is, but it's very poorly defined in the law, which opens it up to abuse of the law, as we've already seen in Massachusetts. That more contents, specific rights for men and women's spaces. Men can loiter, cannot ask them to leave. Now that opens up the store, the place of business to illegal challenge, to a lawsuit. If you ask a man who looks like a man, who's dressed like a man, but who identifies at that time as a woman to leave, he can then turn around and have, you know, launch a sue that establishment. Standard is can look but don't touch. So that man can be in that restroom as long as he doesn't touch, you know, make physical contact. There really isn't any more an issue with him being in there. You have to take his word for it. It's how he identifies, and you obviously can't tell him, even though he looks like a man, dressed like a man, that how he feels, and that's kind of how that definition works into it. Or you are in violation. There is also a one sheet in your flyer. It looks like this with more information on the bathroom bill. It also deals with this issue that happened just last month, I believe, or in December. TJ Maxx in Plainville, a woman was filmed in the restroom, in the women's room there. Asked the staff to call police. They said no. It was against store policy to do that because now in Massachusetts, really, theoretically, according to the law, he had a right to be in there. He was in the restroom for over 30 minutes, and staff could do nothing. May have taped multiple women, we don't know. Finally, someone did, and I believe it was an employee or another woman there, did call police, and he was arrested. These are some of the amendments that were offered when the bill was before the legislature for consideration. Shauna O'Connell from Taunton offered an amendment that would prohibit level 2 and 3 sex offenders trying to take advantage of a law. Take advantage of a law would force them to, you know, meet more criteria in, I believe, level 3 sex offenders. It wouldn't even apply to this law. Wouldn't apply to them. And the legislature shot that down. The prohibition against level 2 and 3 sex offenders, this law applying to them. The Mark Lombardo Amendment from right down the street in Billerica is where Mark is from. would protect police from responding in a good faith call to a call from charges of civil rights violations. So if someone from that Target or that TJ Maxx had called police earlier and said, hey, I saw, you know, a man go into the restroom, and maybe that man was identifying as a woman that day, this would exempt the police from, you know, it wouldn't cause them any issues. The police department wouldn't get in trouble for the police going in and stopping that, taking him out and asking him, and, you know, asking him questions. That amendment was also shot down. Lombardo has also allowed parents, you know, allows parents to protect kids. That was a Jim Lyons amendment, and would exclude school facilities and churches. All those were defeated. Four churches did bring a lawsuit against the Attorney General's office when they said that this did apply to public, you know, to places of worship were considered public accommodations. Thankfully, once that lawsuit was brought by MFI and a national organization that was partnered with them and these four churches in Massachusetts, the Attorney General's office did back off the statement that churches were considered public accommodations. So currently it no longer applies to churches. Again, that's simply the law didn't change at all. It's simply the interpretation of a law that did. So that's something we obviously have to remain vigilant on. That could come back, you know, at any time if someone chooses to challenge that. Okay. Some will. I'm not sure if that was part of the law or if that's part of the anti-discrimination legislation that was passed in 2012. I'm not sure if that's how that's widely enforced. You will notice that some stores have changed the signs on their bathrooms that just say either gender or will have a picture of a man and a woman on it. It's not mandatory right now. Yeah. Some of the penalties. If you don't comply or inappropriate to someone who is in fact transgendered, so if you ask them, hey, you know, why are you going to this women's room, this changing room, penalties are up to a year in jail, a $50,000 fine. Adults are afraid, you know, if it's someone that's at a public pool or a place where, you know, a school, it makes it theoretically harder for adults to protect the children in these spaces. Business owners are afraid to help customers. Police are afraid to adequately respond to calls. Thankfully, that didn't happen in the TJ Maxx situation. They did respond. Creates advantage for misconduct. Just an example of from the Target boycott, which some of you may be familiar with, that happened last year. They adopted this policy nationwide voluntarily. So in Massachusetts, it obviously would have become a law for any Target in Massachusetts. But before that happened, before it was passed, they adopted it nationally. There was national backlash. Over 1.5 million people on record for the boycott through various petitions and things like that. How capitalism worked, it hurt their business. The company chose a policy. The customers didn't like it. The bottom line was it impacted their sales. Their stock price declined. And the board responded. What they did was they created a single stall restroom at the cost of almost $500,000 per store. Again, this is a voluntary position that they just, something that they decided to do on all their stores. It was their right as a store to choose what customers want, and that was saying we have a single stall restroom. So if you are a man who wants to go in the women's room, well, now we have provided an option for you, which is a single stall bathroom. So you're not, you know, making the other customers, the women, uncomfortable by seeing a man in their restroom or vice versa. You can't do that in Massachusetts because Massachusetts took that right away from business owners to do something that would theoretically serve the same purpose by having single stall restrooms and instead saying, you know, you can't, that's not an option for you, even though it's, you know, it's inconvenient for you, but it's better for, you know, it's better for the people is what Target decided. They're not able to do that in Massachusetts. So the bathroom law takes rights away from business owners, the rights of all to safety, privacy, and modesty. So that's just kind of an overview. Where we stand now, we are on the ballot for 2018. So this will appear on a 2018 ballot in November of 2018. We need volunteers to spread the word. We have to start doing that now. You know, we're going to be outspent by the left. They're much more well-funded than we are. But we have a lot of people who, you know, who are boots on the ground, who are the grassroots, who are upset about this, who are gonna, you know, who have gone out and collected over 55,000 signatures and will hopefully, you know, remain involved, even starting as early as, you know, this spring, and this summer to raise awareness, because, you know, we will be outspent, and if we wait till, September, October of 2018, we're not gonna have enough time or resources to get the word out. Lawn signs, we have a lot of lawn signs. Lift drops, door knocking. Obviously, no one wants to go out door knocking right now or lift dropping. Everything would get wet. Come springtime, there will be lift dropping and summer in targeted neighborhoods that we feel are you know, filled with people who are going to support what we're doing. We probably won't be sending you to Boston or anything like that. We'll be sending you to places like Chelmsford, like Billerica, like Drake, and maybe even Lowell, just to give you an example, places around here. We need people at parades, festivals, and other town events handing out push palm cards or maybe with a sign with a booth at some particular places. We need people to write letters to the editor, posting, share things at the Facebook page. I believe that the link is on here. If it's not, keepmasafe.org/join is the website, and there's a link to the Facebook page. You can like that, and we're constantly posting articles about issues like the Target boycott and things that happened to TJ Maxx, and you can share those to help raise awareness. Fundraising, we're in the process, you know, of raising money for the ballot committee to pay for radio, TV, mailings, just getting the message out. And once people know the truth of the overreach, they flock to our side. So the real issue that we're having, and those who help collect signatures can probably attest to this, that a lot of people didn't really know what was happening. And once, you know, if you had time to stop for 30 seconds and explain it to them, overwhelmingly their reaction was, no, we don't want that. And once they really understand the law, they oppose it. So then the goal of the next year and a half, with as much help as we can get, is to raise awareness to what the law actually does. All right. Last but not least, the Renew Mass Coalition, which is where I work. We're kind of the grassroots group part. Yep. Yeah, go ahead. Correct. No, so that's a good point. So during one of the aspects of the signature drive was we only could get a certain amount of signatures per county. The reason they do that is to make sure that the thing you're trying to repeal is actually, the repeal is supported by, you know, a wide group of people across the whole state. So something that doesn't just affect Boston, the rest of the state, you know, or the greater Boston will try and repeal it. And so in this case, you know, there were signatures that we gathered. We got a lot of signatures from Middlesex County. And we could only have, out of that 33,000, we could only have, I believe, 4 or 5, it was 15%, no more than 15% could come from any one county. Right, so that won't apply to the ballot question. The ballot question is going to be like any other question that you've seen on the ballot, like the marijuana question was last November. This one's going to be worded pretty simply because it is a repeal. The question and the language has to actually be, you know, approved by the Secretary of State's office for what it'll actually say, whether it'll be yes or no. I believe it's going to be a yes. Will, do you want to repeal this law? Yes or no? It's going to be something pretty simple like that. It's going to be easy to understand, and each vote for yes is one vote for yes, and each vote for no is one vote for no. So, no, nothing's restricted by where you live. So yeah, your vote here counts as much as, you know, one in Boston or one down on the Cape. And everybody who votes, you know, in the question, obviously, will have their vote counted. Yep. So the Renew Mass Coalition is where I work. I've been there since 2012. We're a 501c4, which is just, you know, for tax purposes. I really have a hard time explaining to you what it means. But it means we can educate, advocate, mobilize, recruit, train, and elect. So we do two parts. During election years, like last year, we help recruit, we help train, and we help candidates who are pro-family, pro-life, who agree with us on the issues, we help them run for office. And in years like this, we do church tours and we hold lobby days, which I'll talk about in a little bit, to help educate the public to become more involved. So come election years like 2018, we have a larger base of people who are going to go out and to get those candidates who agree with them elected. And then once they're elected, in turn, make sure they stay with us on the issues and remind them that, you know, we're here, we care about these issues that we're talking about. So grassroots development, we educate on issues and tactics. That includes things like these briefs like this, and you have another brief from MFI in your packet. These are kind of what they look like. So we produce these on the issues that, you know, that we care about. And we train and do and on tactics on how to win elections and also on how to lobby, which I'll talk about in a minute. We advocate, which is a simple steps to get involved. You can activate. So I'll talk about a few of those things. One of them is a lobby day, which is coming up, which I'll talk about at the end. Advocacy, we get petitions online, circulating online. If you haven't signed one of our online petitions, it means you're probably not on our mailing list. So at the end, once everybody signs in, it'll get you on our mailing list, and you'll say, hey, you know, hey, here's a petition. Sign this to try and, you know, defund Planned Parenthood, or sign this to say you're against the marijuana law, or you want to repeal the bathroom bill, petitions like that. It helps us, you know, gather names of people who agree with us on those issues, and then we can turn around and hopefully get them more engaged. And you're able to, once you're on our email list, email your legislators. We have a lot of good legislation that I'll talk about in a minute. It's not all bad, and we'll want co-sponsors on that legislation. So we have a system where you're able to just click, you know, send a pre-written message to your legislature. You don't have to know who it is. The system can do that for you, and it keeps them on their toes every time. You know, we send out an email. We have, you know, hundreds of people who are in turn emailing their legislators, which is good. We also do recruitment, which includes activists and volunteers, regional leaders, and campaign managers and campaign staff, as well as candidates. So tonight's group, it's about activists and volunteers, getting more people involved and you know, more boots on the ground. The MFI Coalition policy agenda. So I know this pipe is a little small. And by the way, I know you're recording this. You have the PowerPoint presentation too, so if someone wants to look at it after, you guys have it now, so you'll feel free to use it. Supporting, defunding Planned Parenthood, the repeal of the bathroom and locker room law, Justina's law, which has to do with Justina Pelletier, and the basically medical kidnapping that happened a couple years ago, where the family from Connecticut didn't have access to their daughter because the court said that the doctors knew better on how to treat her than her parents, and they wouldn't let them see her or her return home to Connecticut. Deals with parental rights, no more medical kidnappings. Laura's Law, which deals with informed consent for abortion. Constitutional amendment to stop taxpayer funding of abortion. I'll talk about that in a little bit. Now, that's our next ballot question that we'll be tackling in the fall. And encouraging adoption. These all have to do with bills that are currently filed in the legislature, except the constitutional amendment, which I'll talk about in a minute. Opposing the health curriculum, which we talked about a little earlier with the MFI. Physician-assisted suicide, which you'll remember was a ballot question a couple of years ago that was defeated. That's coming back in the form of legislation that was filed a couple of weeks ago. Proposition 80, which is the millionaire's tax, repealing Common Core, and policies that encourage fatherlessness. So you can see there's a broad area from education to, you know, healthcare to fiscal issues that we're involved in. We kind of have, you know, a wide cross-section of people who you know, have overlapping ideals and beliefs. Opposing bad bills. So example, recent Facebook campaign to call on the governor to veto the pay raises. You may have seen this in the paper on the news. It was a big story for a couple of days. The legislature voted to give themselves a pay raise. We ran a Facebook campaign asking the governor to veto the pay raises, which he did. We like to think maybe it was a little bit in part to the pressure that we helped put on him. Shared over 425 times, and it reached 31,000 people. So our ad from the RenewMass Coalition, asking the governor, to veto and asking people to contact the governor and to veto the pay raises, was seen by over 31,000 people. Again, that was in just a short 3 or 4 day span. It all happened pretty quick, if you remember. And he did veto them. Unfortunately, that veto was overridden. Over Christmas break, confidential health care, informal session, No one was paying attention. It was over the Christmas break. There were probably 5 or 6 people total in the house at that point on the floor, and they were hoping no one was paying attention. And this was the health curriculum which you talked about earlier. It was granted under confidential health care. That was stopped because we did have a few good legislators there who were paying attention, and they tried to sneak it through in an informal session. Not many people have to be there, but try to get out the exact legislative term that was used if they tried to do that. But it was stopped, and now it's going to have to come before the full legislature through committees, through hearings that we can all go to, that we can send emails and call about before it happens, because we will be paying attention. Health curriculum, mandatory sex ed, and talked about that. Unfunded mandate for schools, inappropriate content, how to obtain an abortion without parental knowledge. We talked about all that with the MFI slide, lowering the age of consent, and also assisted suicide, which, as I mentioned a little earlier, was defeated by the people of Massachusetts. It was pretty close. I think it was 3 percentage points that it failed by, but the legislators bringing it back this year to try and pass it, opposed to a ballot question. Good legislation, Jim Lyons from Andover. Filed legislation defunding organizations engaging legal organ harvesting, aka Planned Parenthood. Sean O'Connell has filed a bill to reform the welfare system. David Coe's Right to Work, which basically what Right to Work is not having to pay union dues, to basically you're not required to join a union to get any specific job. Kevin Kuros has repealed Common Core. And there's a petition to stop taxpayer-funded funding of abortion, which I believe is next. Oh, that's a laser point. I didn't know I had that. So stop taxpayer funding of abortion. This was a petition that, along with Common Core, which was, unfortunately, we got the signatures with the SJC, Supreme Judicial Court, said it couldn't go on the ballot. There was an effort to collect signatures to put a question on the ballot, which would, it's a little legalese, but basically, the Supreme Court said there's a clause in the Massachusetts Constitution which guarantees, which requires that we fund abortion. Money is used, taxpayer money is used for abortions. Now, it's not in there, but the Supreme Court said that's how this particular language is to be interpreted. So the recourse that we have is to collect over 100,000 signatures this fall over a 10-week period. So we have a little bit more time, but it is a lot more signatures. And that 10,000 includes the buffers, so no one's freaking out thinking, oh, we need 130. 100's with the buffer. So we need about 80,000 signatures, I believe. So 100,000 gives us a good buffer. And it's in a 10-week period. What it would do is put a question on the ballot which would amend the Constitution of Massachusetts to take out the language that the court has said requires that we provide taxpayer dollars to go towards abortions. So it's kind of a long process. But this is, you know, it is important that no one, I think a lot of people would say that they don't want their tax dollars, you know, being used to fund abortions in Massachusetts. So we need church captains, town captains, district coordinators, and volunteers for those who were involved in the Keep MA Safe ballot question committee. You're familiar with things like town captains and church drives and district coordinators and stuff like that. We're still in the planning stages. The volunteer form and stuff that a lot of you are familiar with will probably be rolled out in another month or two. The goal is to get everybody trained in signature collecting earlier. The problem we had with Keep MA Safe was we only had a window that's short window if it started from when it was passed. We weren't sure it was going to pass, and when it did, we just had to start a repeal right off the bat. So this, we're going to have a lot more lead-up time too. We're going to have time to have more trainings like this to educate and train people on how to collect signatures from everything, you know, what's going to be accepted, what's not. We'll have a whole, you can talk about it for an hour probably about how, you know, how the proper way to collect signatures and how to organize your signature papers and report counts and stuff like that. So that'll be coming up in a couple months, probably over the summer is when those trainings will be. Then it requires, once we get those 100,000 signatures, it requires 2 votes in the legislature. 50 yes votes are needed in 2018 and then 1920. And then it gets on the ballot in 2020. So the way that would work, because the constitutional amendment, the Massachusetts House and Senate meet together, there's 200 of them when you put them together, we need a quarter of them, 50 of them, to approve it in 2018 once we get all the signatures. And then there's going to be an election in November of 2018. We're going to elect, hopefully, a lot of new state reps and state senators. They have to meet again all 200, and again has to get 50. So our goal is kind of twofold, is to get it on the ballot, but then just because we, or to collect the signatures, but just because we collect the signatures, unlike Keep MA Safe, doesn't guarantee it's going to get on the ballot. We need to make sure we have a lot of legislators, at least 50 of them, hopefully a lot more, who agree that this should be a question posed to the Massachusetts voters. So it's kind of a two-tiered approach that we have to tackle. The first is getting, you know, a lot of 100,000 signatures this fall, and then it's to lobby the legislators to get 50 votes minimum for it to continue to 2019 and 2020. If you remember going way back to the marriage amendment in 2007, all the signatures were collected, and the reason it didn't end up on the ballot was there weren't 50 legislators willing to vote yes on it at the Constitutional Convention. I believe, I don't know how many it was, but it wasn't that 50 threshold. So we have to make sure not only are we collecting signatures, but we're training people and finding candidates who will then get into the legislature who will vote favorably in things like this. So training, we have candidate trainings, municipal and legislative, some are hosted by us at Renew Mass Coalition. Sometimes we have a group from Washington that we work with will come up and will train. They're a national organization, FACL, the Foundation for Applied Conservative Leadership. Some of you may have been invited to the trainings if you're on our email list. We have those throughout the year, and we host them ourselves throughout the year. We have leadership training, as I mentioned, with FACL. We have activist training, which is kind of what we're doing tonight. Campaign manager training, door-to-door training, media training, and fundraising training. So we're not just here asking you to get involved tonight and then hoping you'll go do it. Well, if there's things that you're going to be more comfortable doing that play to your strengths and abilities and will help you, you know, hone those and be more effective at doing it. Issue advocacy events. Lobby day trainings, which is today, tonight, and throughout the month of February. So thank you for being here. Lobby day at the State House, I want to talk about just briefly. You have a flyer for it, size kind of, I guess, a bulletin insert. It's Wednesday, March 8th at the State House. It's from 10 to 2. The way that will work is we partner with MFI. We like to have between 80 and 100 people there. This is something we do annually every year. And we have briefs like this in a packet that you will take to your legislature and hopefully get a meeting with them and say, hey, you know, my name is so-and-so, I live in your district, these are the issues I care about, here's some more information with them, and then we have a short survey that questions, you know, how to try and gauge how they're feeling towards those issues. We don't just send you off to do that. The morning portion is lobby training. We'll give an example of that briefly. Lobby training, how to lobby your legislatures. You'll hear from probably 6, 8, 9, 10 state reps who will come by, who will talk about effective ways to lobby. It's also, you know, they're happy to come, they're pro-family legislators that we've worked with in the past, come talk to you. We provide lunch and then more lobby training, and then we send you off to meet with the legislatures. Part of the sign-in sheet here is a box that says, I want to attend lobby day. The sooner that you tell us that you're coming, we can look up who your legislator and your state rep and state senator are, and we can make appointments for you. So you don't have to worry about, are they going to be there when I show up? We can say, hey, you know, so-and-so is coming, lives in your district, can you meet with her, you know, Wednesday the 8th at 1:30 for 10 minutes. Yeah.
Is there any people then sign up to one-to-one?
To yours. So in a lot of cases, there are going to be 4, 5, 6 of you who have the same state rep. And in which case, you all go in together, you'll hand them one packet. There's going to be letters in there that you'll each sign for each gift saying, I support such and such an issue. You know, I support, you know, defunding plan for Ennerford or things like that. In most cases, you'll be doing it as a group. In others, it might just be one-on-one. But they're short, you know, 5 to 10 minute meetings. Excuse me. You're very effective. It's much more effective than sending an email. It's more effective than making a phone call. Yep. So you can make an appointment. In most cases, you'll be talking with the legislative aide. We're there on a Wednesday because the legislature is in session. So it's possible that your rep is in a caucus or is on the floor taking a vote on something. If you sign up ahead of time, we will call and try and make an appointment for you. So they will be expecting you. So the chance of you getting to talk with your state rep does increase. It's probably only going to be 5 minutes. You know, they are busy, but you know, it's you being in front of them, making the effort to come into Boston and to talk with them is the most effective thing we can do. So on a lot of the bad pieces of legislation, the idea is to not let them come to a vote, to provide, show that there is enough opposition to where they don't even want to bring them out of committee. So things like the sex ed mandate, there's a few others. We've kept them in, you know, for years. We kept the bathroom bill in committee, and it never came. Finally, you know, they had enough support to get it out. But for many years, the bathroom bill didn't just happen last year. It was several years they've been trying to pass the bathroom bill, and we effectively showed there was enough opposition to keep it in committee. So the goal for the bad bills is to not let them even come to a vote. For the good bills, obviously, we want votes taken. No. So they can just choose not to, they will have a hearing on them, but they can choose to just, to not take action on them and to just leave them in committee. Yep. So I think there's thousands of bills filed every year. The number that come to a vote is probably, is a fraction of that. And unfortunately it happens to good bills too. It happens to ours, because we don't have, we need more support. Yep. It's something they don't want to deal with. It's something they don't want to have to explain to their constituents, which is why you being there is so important. But a lot of bills are filed and very few follow the process through, to passage. So that's why as many people as we can get there to talk to their individual state reps and state senators, it really is very effective. So we have the lobby day training, on March 8th. We definitely love to have everybody there. Like I said, and the sign-in sheet's here. Please, before you go, sign up so we have your contact information, email. Yeah, at the very least, you can get on our email list. If you're not able to make it on the 8th, we have stuff going on all year. Hearing and testimony turnout. So a lot of these bills will come up before we'll have committee hearings in the spring. Some of you may have gone into Boston to testify in the bathroom bill hearing. I'm not sure. We had, there were a couple hundred people there. In May, we have Celebrate Life Day, which is hosted by Jim Lyons at the State House. We have a lot of pro-life people there. It's opposed to protesting or defunding Planned Parenthood. It's there just to celebrate life and crisis pregnancy centers across the state all come together and we'll be a part of that day. Mass Teacher Day on the Hill is geared towards middle school and high school kids. It's a lobby day. In July, that happens during budget time generally, and we have a lot of youth that come in, adults too, and it's basically another lobby day. We also have a mock Congress or a mock legislative session in the afternoon that we kind of train the kids on. We have a parliamentarian come in, and they basically get to be a legislator for the afternoon. They write their own bills, they go through the committee process, and they pass them or don't pass them, as it were. That's in July. And the Rep Lyons Christmas event is our Christmas party we have every year. I don't know if anybody has been to that. It's usually in Worcester. The Rep Lyons Christmas event was a nativity scene at the State House. Some of you may have heard for the first time that anybody can remember. Jim Lyons got a nativity scene in the State House, and that I think happened on the 22nd of December, so right before Christmas. You may have seen it on the news. It was actually a pretty big deal. You wouldn't think, but getting a nativity scene in the State House was news in Massachusetts. So these are a couple of the tips that we'll go over on Lobby Day, how to lobby, to know the facts, talking points, examples. You all get a copy of this too. So the thing you're giving to the legislature, you're kind of on the same page. They're hearing some of the same things that they're going to be reading later if they read what you hand out. Simply be polite. A lot of this is pretty self-explanatory. Be polite, respectful. Even if they don't agree with you, their age might be a little rude to you sometimes. They're pretty short. They say, okay, yeah, they know that they're not going to agree with you on anything. They don't really want to talk to you. Be polite back. Tell personal stories. So it's like the bathroom bill. If people are saying, my daughter uses a YMCA. I don't want the locker rooms there to be opened up potentially to have men coming in. My sister had a crisis pregnancy. Use secular arguments. you know, sometimes a legislator will tune you out if you start coming in with religious arguments. There's nothing wrong with those. But it's also good to incorporate, like I said, you know, personal stories and other things that they may not automatically tune you out. Leave a letter and contact info. We'll provide you that stuff with your name. You sign it. You know, I agree with Justina's law. I agree with other issues that were there. Let's see. Or repealing the bathroom bill is what it was last year. Or changing the recreational marijuana law in Massachusetts. We'll have, there'll be about three or four letters in that packet that you'll be leading with them. So they'll probably follow up with you. Hey, you know, thanks for coming to my office. And we don't agree, but you know, I appreciate you taking the time to come to Boston. Yeah, so there's one of the things in your packet, I'm going to get to those in just a second, are roll calls. There's two copies of roll calls, and there's a copy of the, from Brad Jones Jr.'s office that shows the percentage of the time the reps vote with the speaker. So we do have an idea going in if they're going to be favorable or opposed to what you're going to be talking about. But it's still good to make that contact because every single one, you know, someone, hey, it gives them pause. So educating voters in districts, so over here are the briefs that I just handed out, and then these are voter guides a week before the election at churches and in parking lots. We'll put them on cars in targeted districts. They'll have the challengers voting, the challengers or the incumbents voting record based on these roll calls, and they'll have the responses from the questionnaire that we send out. Any candidate we help has to fill out a questionnaire to make sure that they agree with us on the issues, and that they signed it saying, you know, they're gonna you know, vote with us on the issues if elected. So it basically provides a contrast between the incumbent and the challenger who we're theoretically supporting, saying, hey, you know, these are the issues that theoretically you would care about if we're leafing them on a church parking lot. And your legislator, if you look at Jim Arciero's down in Westford, in the bordering district in the Yesel, I believe that's the precinct in Chelmsford, voted with the Speaker of the House 100% of the time. So that's, you know, that's kind of something that this illustrates, you know, wait a second, these 12 issues, I don't agree with Jim Arciero on any of these issues, the way he voted. You know, clearly he doesn't represent me and, or, you know, hopefully maybe many of the people in my church. So that's one way we educate voters in election years. Social media, Facebook videos, ads, online petitions. You may have seen some of our ads because you liked our Facebook page. You may have seen some of our ads because you live in a district where we targeted them and paid to have them boosted. Our video of the repeal of the bathroom bill rally at the State House, a lot of people, we had a couple of those. You can see we had the steps filled, and a lot of people, you know, came to that. And then different ads, talking about parental rights, this is an ad we did against State Senator Ann Gobey for voting for the bathroom bill. So where we are now, House roll calls. So the bathroom law, I don't know what House roll calls we have here. I don't know if these got labeled. Yeah, so this, let's see. Yes, this one here is S-735. You can see it was 36 to 116. So this shows how all the legislators voted on their on the bathroom bill. So if you look to the left is the Y or the N. Again, 36 no's and 116 to pass. We have a ways to go, obviously, but you know, the goal is to keep the pressure on as well as electing more pro-family legislators who are going to vote with us on issues like that. And then the pay raise bill was similar, 116 for and 44 against. I believe that's the other roll call you have, and it is. Defund Planned Parenthood, 40 yes, 117 no. Senate roll calls for the bathroom law was 4 to 33. It's only 4 state senators voted against the bathroom bill. The pay raise bill was 9 to 30, so a little more were opposed to it there. The health curriculum did pass the Senate, but never was taken up in the House, was 6 to 32. So that's one of the things that we don't want to come up for a vote, because we know that if it does, they'll have the votes to pass. So something like the health curriculum, that's something that we will lobby hard and have you call and email your legislators to tell them, hey, you know, we don't want this, so hopefully it doesn't come up to a vote, because it has once in the Senate, and it passed 32-6. Many legislators will do what they're told by the leadership, and that's why we need to defeat them. Again, that's another handout that you have. If you know who your legislator is, you can find him on here and see how Tom Golden's again next door in Lowell, voted with Speaker 99.3% of the time. Colleen Gary is a more conservative Democrat legislator from Drake. She still voted with the Speaker 92% of the time. So you can see how they're really, they're not most likely listening to people that are in their districts. So we need to get people from those districts to the State House to remind them, you know, why they were sent there and to represent them, and also identify and elect more candidates who will vote more with the people of their district and not the Speaker of the House. Robert DeLeo, so the Speaker of the House. Pretty much, yeah. The Democrats in Beacon Hill, they vote with how the Speaker, in line with what the Speaker tells them to do. So a lot, if you're, Jim Lyons will tell a story a lot of times where there's big boards in the State House that are red and green based on yes and no votes. And the Speaker came in and voted no, red, on something he was supposed to vote yes on. So the board filled with red from all the Democrats. And then the Speaker realized what he had did, and he switched it to green to vote yes. And sure enough, all the reds became greens because they all switched just to vote with the Speaker. So a lot of times, maybe they don't even know what they're voting on, but they just go in, they look and see how the Speaker voted, and they vote that way. The Speaker's a Democrat. So it's the majority of, yeah, so. So there are currently, I believe, 34 Republicans out of the 160 on Beacon Hill in the state legislature. So you can see there's a very big imbalance, and that's why they can get away with doing stuff like that, just voting with the Speaker all the time, because it's really hard to hold them accountable when the margins are that wide. That's actually the wrong district, but I'm not sure where the slide for this area is. But if you want to look up if you want to know who your legislator is, you can go on the MFI website. There's a link to find your legislator. You can go on wheredoivotema.com, and that'll tell you who the legislator is. And also, if you sign up or get on the mailing list, we'll put you in contact automatically with yours. So in 2018, we have an opportunity. Out of 160 House districts, 60 lean conservative, we only have 35-40 conservatives now. Republicans, we have 35. 91 of the House districts, Baker won. So Republicans theoretically can win in 91 of those 160 districts. 109 were won by Scott Brown in 2010. Over 40 target very competitive districts is in 2018. And then a little disclaimer at the bottom, you can engage your recruitment of candidates who share our values, but cannot coordinate expenditures in support of them at election time. So we help identify candidates before they can become candidates, and then once they're on the ballot, we support them by doing things like voter guides, like we saw earlier, and making sure people are educated about who their rep is and how he voted and that there is an alternative to that candidate. So as you can see, you know, like we talked about having to get 50 once that taxpayer funding of abortion signatures are collected. Right now we have 35 to 40, so we have a lot of lobbying work to do and a lot of election work to do in 2018. Ways to get more involved. You can volunteer in our office, which is right down Route 3 in Woburn, or in your community, collecting signatures, you know, come spring, knocking on doors in your neighborhood, handing out flyers about the bathroom law and the repeal efforts. Lead and coordinate with others. Run for office yourself. We will train you. We're probably going to have probably half a dozen trainings this year, and we're going to have even more next year. So if you want to run for office, if that's how you're feeling called to serve, to be involved, and you feel like you don't know where to start, talk to us. We can point you in the right direction and train you and help you along the way. Petitions, door-to-door, events and parades, and especially online. Then that goes back to emailing and calling your legislator. The petitions, again, Keep MA Safe was one we did last year, and then eliminating taxpayer funding of abortion in Massachusetts coming up in the fall. And door-to-door can be involved in both of those. Community teams, create a group in your church. It's hard, you know, easy for us in February to get to a lot of churches. it's hard to do it on a regular basis. So if there's someone in the church who can be a leader in that area, and we can talk to that person, then they can in turn communicate the issues that we're talking about or we need help on back to their group in their church. That's very helpful. District captains, this is something that we had with the Keep MA Safe campaign to help coordinate your legislative district, a group of small towns, and city captains for larger municipalities that might include several legislative districts. So we try and keep you local. We need help locally. You might have to go to a town next door sometimes, but for the most part, and unless it's coming into Boston for lobby day, you're going to be able to stay in your neighborhood and be effective. The winner of political contest is determined by the number and effectiveness of the activists on the respective side, Morton Blackwell from the Leadership Institute, who we partner with on some of our trainings. Questions? Keep in touch. Keep MA Safe is info@keepmasafe.org. This is my email address, Michael, who is a church coordinator for the Mass Family Institute, and Robert, who is our office administrator, also on there. Any four of those people, email addresses, will get you plugged in, and will get you on the way to being more involved. I think that's all. So we can do questions now. I don't know what time it is. I probably went a little long. It's 10 after 8, so I guess we have time for a few questions. If people have them, I'm happy to stay. If you want to pass around the sign-in sheet,